compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I'm Father Matthew Spencer, back sitting in for Patrick. So happy to be with you while Patrick I'm sure enjoying some well-deserved time with his family, prepping for Thanksgiving perhaps. In fact, I heard the turkey in the background. I heard it during the intro and I thought, you're just going to give me PTSD or something from a turkey popping out of nowhere. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Be happy to take your phone calls today. A lot of interesting things I want to talk about today, but maybe we could start by looking back at the USCCB meeting that took place last week. A couple of times a year, the bishops from across the country gather in person together for meetings to plan their endeavors, to discuss topics on mission and on administrative things, I'm sure, on the sacraments, on the liturgy. It's interesting, you know. I mean, if you like church things, if you're a little church mouse and you enjoy the ins and outs of the church, maybe it's interesting to you too. There are these different facets of administration and the church that have an impact on you and on me, like bishops' conferences, but they seem to have more authority than they actually do. What do I mean? In your diocese, the authority is the bishop, right? I mean, he's not the ultimate authority. Obviously, there is canon law, there is the Pope, there is our tradition, there is Scripture, and there's Jesus himself, right? But bishops have a principal role in leading their dioceses and leading the faithful. And it's very important, you know, in church, in the Catholic Church theology, it's very important the role of the bishop. The Second Vatican Council explored this in some depth, right? The role of bishops in the church and in as pastors of people. But also when they get together, there are certain responsibilities that are given to national bishops' conferences, and national gatherings of bishops can do some generally small things. So, for example, they published a document some years back called Faithful Citizenship, the Bishops of the United States, and they it's a document that discusses the involvement of Catholics in politics. And it outlines some of the principles of the Catholic faith, but also how those apply to our engagement in society and our civic duties, these types of things. That document came up again this last week. It was a complex discussion because the bishops had a variety of options they could do. This document now, the bishops are saying, is perhaps a little bit dated, because, well, it was written 10 years ago, I want to say, or no, more than 10 years ago. It was written, I believe, well before Pope Francis was serving in the seat of Peter. So it doesn't have any references to Pope Francis, for example. It touches on a lot of the major topics in the world, but is also maybe little by little getting out of date, you know, for example, the concerns about the fundamentals of democracy that we've been grappling with in our own country aren't necessarily described in Faithful Citizenship. Faithful Citizenship as a document kind of presumes that there's this healthy democracy in which we can practice these civic duties. So the bishops brought this up, and they had these options to either revise Faithful Citizenship, to publish it in a different form, to... I don't want to say kick the can down the road, because that sounds like it sounds rather pejorative, but basically to say it's not the right time to do this. Why don't we republish it and we can explore how to move forward with it later? And it's that last option that they ultimately overwhelmingly decided upon. The bishop said, you know, this is a difficult process. It took them a long time to create Faithful Citizenship, And they're looking, I think, at least 5 or 6 years to be able to rehash a new document and to really put a thoughtful approach to it again. Of course, the challenge that the bishops are facing is that politics doesn't move that slowly. Politics doesn't wait 5 or 6 years for the bishops to be able to engage or guide their people. In fact, you look back at the topics we were facing 5 or 6 years ago, and the world almost seemed like a different place, right? And so really what faithful citizenship as a document, I think, has to do, just because of this process, it has to focus on principles. It has to focus not on necessarily specific concrete realities of the political system or world, but instead focus on overarching principles that are a little less time-bound, right? Have a little more flexibility in time. So that was interesting. That was an interesting thing that happened last week. And maybe you could pick up. And by the way, the bishops voted to, I think it was 205 bishops, if I recall the vote, which is a large majority of bishops decided to. Yeah, it's a good document, most of them were saying. It's still applicable in many senses. Does it need an updating? Yes, but we need to explore how to do that. So this is something, for example, that the USCCB could do. By the way, the USCCB stands for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Another important part of their work last week was to elect new leadership for the coming years. So Archbishop Timothy Broglio of the Archdiocese for the Military Services was elected as president of the conference. Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore was elected as vice president. They elected a number of bishops as committee members. All of these were helpful and important kinds of discussions, you know. And there's one discussion that I didn't see a lot of people discussing in the news. In fact, if you go and look online for news related to it, it's not really there. And it's kind of the topic that's out of all the agenda and all the things that the bishops were planning to talk about, it's one of the things that's most on my heart, which has to do with marriage and marriage preparation. So many of you have gone through it, and some of you went through it 60 years ago, some of you went through it 6 months ago. Marriage prep is always the shifting, moving reality that depends upon the local, maybe, requirements of the bishop. It depends on the local zeal of your parish priest. It depends on the engagement of the couple themselves. How do you actually prepare well for a lifetime commitment to marriage? Is it worth it to spend, you know, 3 months going to classes, another 3 months completing all the documentation and paperwork, maybe doing an engaged encounter weekend retreat or something similar like that? During COVID, a lot of these things were online, which was, I think, very difficult to do. How do you learn about relationships when your primary means of communication is virtual? Yeah, these are hard things. I want to get into talking about marriage prep a little bit, and I just want to plant this seed in your mind, because you might have more experience personally in marriage prep than I do. I mean, I have been involved as a priest. I've been involved as a shepherd, maybe, trying to help people engage in this, and I certainly do have some thoughts about it. But maybe your own experience with marriage prep has also been rather, maybe it was good, I hope so, and maybe it wasn't so good. Maybe it did serve a great purpose, or maybe it could have been better, and maybe you look back and think, well, it really missed the mark on these particular topics. I'd be curious to know. Be curious to know what your experience of marriage prep is, and the frustrations with it, to be honest. I mean, I most dioceses require 6 months preparation between the time you schedule your wedding and the time that you're married. And there's a very important reason. We're going to dive into these different topics in the coming minutes. But there are very important reasons why the church invites us to take it slowly and to wait. Maybe not jump into marriage right away. But sometimes it doesn't necessarily have the effect that we want. So let's step back. What does marriage preparation look like? Before you get married in the church places a responsibility on the celebrant and on the pastor, which sometimes are the same person, sometimes they aren't, right? The pastor is overseeing the whole entire parish, and sometimes the celebrant is his associate, or the celebrant is a priest who comes in from out of town, maybe a friend of the family or the couple. And there's a responsibility that these individuals have to make sure that they're celebrating the sacraments in a worthy way, in a way where they can be confident that people are ready to receive them. And to do that, we often ask couples then to learn what marriage is from the Catholic perspective. It's important. Why? Because, well, the world has a very different understanding of marriage than the Catholic Church does. You know this. I know this. I mean, we look at the definition of marriage in society or in the world, and it's radically different sometimes than what the Church proposes. The Church says that marriage is a lifelong commitment. It's not intended as a temporary arrangement or contract, but it's a lifelong commitment between one man and one woman in which they share their life and love with each other in a way that is exclusive, in a way that is personal, in a way that is not shared with other people outside of that relationship. It doesn't mean that they isolate themselves completely, but it does mean that they reserve certain aspects and elements of their life for their spouse alone. Marriage also is ordered towards the education and procreation of children. That's the place where God designed children and you and me to be raised and to be formed and to be given a good foundation in holiness and in virtue. And so marriage has this very important role. How do you learn how to do that? Well, most parishes will ask couples to, for example, attend certain classes, maybe a series of 6 weeks, once a night, and in which you learn different elements of marriage. You look at, well, what does the church think theologically about this? What does the church say from a practical standpoint about this? What are the boundaries of marriage? What kind of things are important or not to do in marriage? Sometimes those classes cover rather, how can I say this in a way that's not putting it down? They're rather simple, maybe, or they might not be relegated to religious preparation necessarily, but they're important. For example, managing finances, communication patterns, sometimes overcoming previous relationship issues, sometimes woundedness from the past. Many, all of us, I think, to one degree or another, bring a certain woundedness to our vocation. We none of us had a perfect mother or a perfect father. Sometimes we had very difficult home lives, which leave us with a lack of trust towards another or with difficulty in giving of ourselves the way we should. So these topics will come up in marriage preparation, and they're good topics. They're important, in my opinion. I mean, even the administrative financial things. Couples will talk about how many kids do they want to have, which is a surprising. I mean, I'm surprised how many couples can get married and then after the fact realize, oh wait, we're not completely on the same page about this. Joe only wants one child and I want 11 kids. There's a disconnect there, and that's really important. Now, usually I don't see a discrepancy that large, but sometimes it will pop up where people will think, well, I think God is calling me to have 3 children. I'm going to be open to as many as God sends me. That's an important part of being married, right? To be open to life and to not take over completely the planning of your family, to allow God to be a part of that. But maybe your spouse has a different idea about it. It's very important to talk about these things beforehand, right? Not to mention the whole understanding of sexual intimacy and the preparation for that is very important. Unfortunately, this is an area where I think a lot of our Catholic parishes are dropping the ball. I think a lot of Catholics in general don't understand the church's teaching on sexuality inside of marriage. Maybe they think the church is a little antiquated or medieval, and they think, well, come on, we're living in the 21st century. We have all of these amazing technologies that allow us to artificially choose whether we're going to conceive or not. And they think, well, I don't need to embrace that teaching of the Catholic Church. And I would say, well, you better wait and stop, because it's a very serious thing to choose that, to say, no, I'm not going to trust the church on when it comes to natural family planning, say, and artificial contraception, and the evil of artificial contraception. It's a topic that I think a lot of parishes are shying away from because maybe they don't understand it themselves. Maybe they're a little embarrassed. Maybe they feel like they shouldn't be entering into this very personal, private, intimate part of a couple's discussion. I personally don't feel that way. I feel it's a responsibility to share the good news with others, to share the good news of God's plan for marriage and family with them. It's good news that natural family planning is the best way to plan your family. It's good news to know that it's not okay to use artificial contraception. Is it hard to receive that news? Yeah, it is. It's a difficult thing to live out. I understand that. But it's good news to hear that, right? Just like it's good news to hear that we have to repent. It's good news to learn that some of the things we're doing are sinful. We need to turn away from it. It's also maybe not taught as much, natural family planning and the understanding of the church with regards to artificial contraception. It's perhaps not shared as much because, well, maybe people themselves don't understand it. Maybe it's hard to find couples that will engage and teach these methods for you to plan your family. I think it's also hard because many couples are just not convinced that it is good news. I mean, you look at the statistics in our country, at least, and Catholics, very sadly, in my opinion, are using artificial contraception in the same number as the general population. I mean, last time I looked at the numbers, there was no difference in the number of the statistical proportions of people thinking it was okay to use that, or at least using it regardless. And that's sad to me. To me, it shows a lack of evangelization, a lack of formation, and maybe this is part of the problem. It perpetuates itself. All of this to say, you know, that we're looking at these, the bishops are looking at all of these topics and saying, how can we help married couples to embrace these truths better? How can we help couples to embrace God's plan for marriage and family better? Well, that's what I want to explore a little bit in the coming minutes. I think we can look at what the bishops have been talking about. I think we can look also this past summer, the Dicastery for Marriage and Family Life from the Vatican issued some very interesting comments on marriage preparation itself. We'll get to this. Your phone calls and much more in the coming hours. I'm Father Matthew Spencer, sitting in for Patrick Madrid. Very happy to be with you. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll be back right after this.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I'm Father Matthew Spencer, the provincial of the Oblates of St. Joseph, sitting in answering your questions to the best of my ability. No promises that I'll get it right, but I'll do my best. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We're hoping Patrick has a nice Thanksgiving week. He's just spending time with family and friends, I'm sure, and getting a little rest this week. Thanks be to God for that. Marriage prep, it's a topic that's very close to my heart because I think it has the potential to have a huge impact and be a huge aid for couples. Is it a huge help? Does it have a huge impact on couples? I think we have a long way to go, personally. I mean, I think that a lot of times it becomes this process that people just get really feel it's very onerous and burdensome, and they check the boxes, they go through the process, but maybe it's not as life-changing as we want it to be for them. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit today. But how about we hop to the phones? We have a few people waiting, and I'm happy to take your calls. Gail is calling from Texas. Hello, Gail. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hello, Father Spencer. So good to talk to you.
Your
help us to not miss Patrick so much. I wanted to address the issue that was not discussed when my husband and I went through our marriage prep. We had been married before. We went through an annulment process. That was all very, very good and very healing for both of us. And we went through marriage prep with the deacon. And went with a lot of good discussions. But one thing that was not discussed, and should have been, especially since we were an older couple, was retirement. And, you assume sometimes that the other person feels the same way, you know, want to retire early and go to the beach or whatever it is, you know. But the other, your spouse, your future spouse, may not feel that way. And afterwards, it can become a struggle and, can be a challenge, when when you feel different. And so that we're resolving that. We've gone through it, and a lot of opportunity for prayer for both of us. But, it's just one of those things. I encourage marriage prep people to discuss that with the couple, even if they're young, just to tell them to, have that as part of their discussion as they get older.
Gail, that's fascinating. I'm trying to think back. I've been a priest since 2009, so I'm just about 13 and a half years now. I'm trying to think if we've ever talked about retirement plans in a marriage prep course. I mean, from a practical standpoint, like you said, just to talk about it and say, well, what is your ideal of retirement? Do you want to move to the Florida Keys and just spend time in the sun, or do you want to, keep working until you can't stand anymore? Do you want to go abroad and go overseas? I mean, it sounds kind of basic. And like you said, Gail, it sounds very far off, as if, oh, I have 30 years to figure that out, and I'm sure we'll figure that out together. But it's a very good example, Gail, of a topic that we would just presume that, or we would just not think about engaging and talking about and hashing through. And it's not that even we would have the same perspective at the start of our marriage as we would at the end of the marriage, but to even be open to that communication is so important. Gail, thank you. That's a very, very good insight. I'm very grateful that you brought that idea to us. And I hope those who are involved in marriage prep are listening, going, oh, putting that on their list too. It was this past summer that the dicastery for the marriage and family life in the Vatican discussed this change in how marriage preparation is done. Instead of just having a few classes, a weekend retreat, and a few meetings with your parish priest or parish deacon. Sometimes this is the total program that a parish might have. They wanted to make the process longer. Can you imagine? More than 6 months. They wanted to make it, I think, a 12-month process, but to consider it almost like somebody who's being prepared to be baptized, almost like the catechumenate, to say, this is a very serious commitment that you're preparing to make. And to do that, you have to spend a lot of time to ponder this. Now, some people might scratch their heads and say, I don't think I should wait that long to get married. And that might be true. I mean, some people perhaps already have been together for some years, haven't started that preparation process. I can also say that in my formation to be a priest, I spent myself 7.5 years, I think, before I was ordained, from the time I entered the seminary to, and that was relatively fast, by the way. That was relatively quick compared to some of my peers. And even that amount of time was important for me to make that decision. So I think that's a very special, important consideration. Okay, enough words for me. How about we go to Jerry, who's calling from Robbinsdale, Minnesota. Hello, Jerry. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
That might be.
Hello, oh, Jerry. Are you there? Oh, hi.
I am. Yeah. you know, I wanted to say, as far as marriage prep, my husband and I have been married for 33 years. Mm. And we were married in the Pacific Northwest. I remember there was really nothing as far as our pre-marriage. We had a great time with our pre-marriage training, our pre-Cana classes. But as you commented, the only a small part from the couple training us, she handed us the calendar rhythm method. And, you know, we just, I think I even said no thank you. And I have to say, years later, we did go back. I had a medical situation. So 10 years later, here in Minnesota, and we had decided to just, I made that jump. We made the jump. My husband is not Catholic, but we were given the Creighton model, and it was such a huge blessing. And I wholeheartedly just encourage people, look at Creighton model. It helped me not only with our planning our family, but so many other ways for my health. It's just an overall view of a woman's health and fertility. And where I think our church falls down right now is that we also have methods that are really kind of flaky. And I say this coming from 19 years of dealing with this, but also having my friends who were, there's different methods, and each couple, I believe, needs to evaluate. And during that pre-Cana time, not only should they be talking about how many children that they hope for, but the priests, I think, and the parishes need to know that a lot of these methods do not have the same rates of effectiveness or whatever the church or the couple may want. And so these different methods I found are in competition with each other. Hmm. There's the couple league, and I think Creighton model. And there's some other ones. I think one was Family of the Americas. And I know Creighton model was developed by Creighton University. It is solid. There are doctors who follow it. My medical clinic is devoted to it, and I've known a lot of people to really get, it's a very exacting method.
It is. Excuse me, Jerry. I'm just going to jump in here. I agree with you. You know, Jerry is talking about different methods of natural family planning. This is a way to plan your marriage and to be open to life while also taking into consideration, you know, the concrete realities that you have. If you're going through a financial difficulty and you have to postpone having a child for that summer or for that year, then the natural family planning gives you that possibility in a way that's morally acceptable in the church. And as Jerry, I'm so glad you pointed out, I mean, natural family planning is not the calendar rhythm method. I think so many people imagine that the church just says, yeah, well, it wouldn't work for me because my cycle is not regular. It wouldn't work for me because I'm, you know, don't follow the calendar when it comes to my cycle. No, natural family planning, the true methods like the Creighton method, the Billings method, the symptothermal method, which all have different advantages and, as Jerry pointed out, different proponents, they all use indicators from the woman's body, right? They use temperature, they use the consistency of mucus, they use these different indicators to help know very precisely when the woman is ovulating, when she's fertile, which then helps the couple to know what God might be desiring of them in that moment, right? And it's important also, as Jerry pointed out, for communication between the couple. It's important for couples knowing what's going on in the other person's life. It's important for them to share the responsibility for planning the family and not just place that burden on one person, which is often what happens when it comes to artificial means of contraception. It is hard. I know there is, I mean, I don't want to get too much in the weeds when it comes to NFP. I know there is a lot of discussion between the different advantages and disadvantages of these methods that Jerry was referring to. And it's true. I would say, though, for those who are starting out, don't get caught up in that. Once you learn one, you can start branching off and learning others. It's not as difficult as you think, believe it or not. It sounds maybe a little intimidating. The difficult part is getting your spouse on board, getting yourself on board. That's the hard part. The hard part is learning to be open, to trust that God will help you plan your marriage and your family that way. That's the most challenging part. And once you say yes to that, once you say yes to God's will for you there, then of course, the rest will follow.
I just wanted to say the calendar rhythm method is also no longer promoted or offered by the church.
Thanks be to God. I think because of the work of Creighton, because of the work of the Couple to Couple League, I think people realize that the calendar method is not natural family planning the way the church teaches. Although it does have its place in areas maybe where it does apply. But yeah, thanks a lot, Jerry. I appreciate your perspective. It's very helpful.
Thank you. God bless you.
Yeah, God bless you too. You know, I think what I didn't get an opportunity to get to share with Jerry is something that she alluded to, which is there's resistance in the church, right? There's resistance from pastors, maybe from priests. There's resistance from people and those who are teaching marriage classes. There's a lot of conversion that still needs to happen. There's a lot of understanding that still needs to be gleaned and learned by us. But I think it comes down to courage. Am I courageous enough to trust the church on this? Am I courageous enough to trust that the church might know better than I do about these things? We're so quick to just dismiss and say, well, the church shouldn't be involved in my bedroom, right? The church shouldn't come into my own personal private life. I would just say the church is founded by Jesus Christ to lead us to holiness. And if that means entering into those most important intimate moments of our life, of course the church should be involved in that discussion, because the church is helping us to know God's will for us, right? Is it hard? Yeah, it means we have to trust more. Is it difficult? Yes, because there we have to sacrifice, we have to learn. So natural family planning, in my opinion, is such an essential part of marriage preparation that is oftentimes just missed completely, or sometimes it's just an hour class that somebody has to take and they walk away and think, well, I guess I'm not doing this because I don't know where to go from here. There are apps that will help you track your fertility. There are apps that will help you put into practice these different methods. There are worksheets you can get. There are people trained around the country. So don't put that off. We're talking marriage prep here for a little bit on the Patrick Madrid Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And Father Matthew Spencer, so happy to be sitting in for Patrick. I'll be back after this short timeout.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find out more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Father Matthew Spencer sitting in for our beloved Patrick, who's probably sipping a Mai Tai somewhere down in Mexico. No, I'm just kidding. God, I'm sure he's spending some time with his family in preparation for Thanksgiving, and I'm just blessed. In fact, it's a privilege to be able to sit in for him. We're talking marriage prep. Why? Well, mostly the discussion, in my opinion, came out because of the meeting from the bishops this past week. The bishops talked about a variety of different things, as I mentioned. They had their elections. They had their elections of committee members, not only of their main administration, but also of those leading the principal committees in the USCCB. They talked about the life issues and the concern that bishops have that people in the pews maybe aren't on board with the church's teaching on the life issues to the extent that we all should be. But as I said, the topic that to me was so important and unfortunately didn't get a lot of press is this need that we have for an improvement in marriage preparation in the church. I think perhaps the reason that it doesn't get the attention it needs is you only go through it once, right? So you slog through it maybe. Maybe you had a great experience. I'm not trying to be so negative and say it's always bad. I'm sure some people and perhaps many people have had just fantastic transformative experiences through marriage prep. I also know that some people haven't. And sometimes you go through the process, you get it done, you make sure that the pastor is pleased and happy with you complying with everything he's asked, and then you leave it behind, and maybe it's not a concern of yours anymore. And maybe that's why there's not a huge push to transform it, to revamp marriage prep inside of our nation, inside of around the world, because, well, it's a one-time experience, one-off deal that maybe later you just think, well, this is how it has to be. I don't think that's the way we should look at it. I don't think that's how the church or our bishops look at it, but I can see how that mindset might settle in. To me, it's important because it creates the possibility, or it aids, I should say, the possibility for either success in marriage or not. I mean, that's a strong statement, right? To say that, well, this experience could make or break your lifelong commitment. But I think it's possible. For example, if you're taught natural family planning, if you're taught not only the mechanics of it, I should say, but also the reasoning behind it, if you're given that good news in a way that you really say, oh, wow, I need to rethink what I'm doing here. Or maybe like Jerry, maybe it takes some years to get to that point, as she shared personally, but you're so grateful after the fact. But maybe that seed was planted in marriage prep. So yeah, I think it's important. I'm glad that our bishops are talking about it. And I'm sure we have a lot of work to go. Should we make couples wait 12 months? I don't think it's the time that should be the question. I think it should be the effectiveness of it. But certainly, sometimes time is the main remedy and the main component to growth and formation. I guess time will tell if we'll see that. My concern, I think, is that few people are already getting married in the Catholic Church. Why is that? I think because people don't see marriage, even Catholics, don't see the importance of marriage as a sacrament. And so they just kind of, well, I don't want to get married in that church. I want to get married on a beach or underwater in a hot air balloon or even just in a garden. I want to do it in a way that the church does not approve of under ordinary circumstances. And so I just don't go to the Catholic Church. And we miss this opportunity to connect with them. And especially if they're afraid that it's going to take them a year, that might really be intimidating to them. So if we do change those requirements, which I'm on board with, I'm okay with, I think we need to still somehow help people to know that this is going to help them, that this will be fruitful, that this will be important for their marriage. I do hope that more and more Catholics come back to marriage in the church, because so many have strayed. So many people are just not getting married at all. I mean, if you go to your local parish and talk to your priest about the statistics of it, I shouldn't generalize, it's not everywhere that this is the case, but in a lot of parishes, the number of marriages in that parish have dropped off precipitously. It's not that there are fewer people in the town, it's that they're just not getting married in the Catholic Church. And there's some disconnect that's happening there, right? How about we go to Kevin, who's calling from Florida. Kevin's been waiting a little while. So thanks, Kevin, for your patience. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Thank you. I've been working in Florida, so I found this Redland radio station, and I downloaded the app. Been down here a month, so I'm really happy about that. So thank you.
Yeah.
Before I get in my spot, you just said about people getting married in the Catholic Church, and I'm going to say, not really an argumentative side of it, but the reason why I don't think people are getting married in a Catholic Church or a lot of places is because of the amount of technology we have. It's so out there that it's glorified to get married on the beaches, with the movies, with the internet, everything, that they're making everything so wonderful that they're not incorporating what God's word is. It's just, hey, we're going to get married, and there's none of that. So it's a public issue, not a Catholic issue.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't get married in a lot of churches. Okay, so for an example, my wife and I, she's not Catholic. She's Church of England. And so in this country, you would be close to Episcopal. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't raised going to a church. So we had to go to a church, and they wouldn't marry us because I was Catholic, but because she was Church of England, they did, which mm-hmm. was weird to me. But we're not, you know, I know you can't teach a lot of this stuff in public school, but mm-hmm. we've been married, you know, 31 years. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I filed for divorce 4 times, but didn't go through with it because, and then later on, I realized, you know, hey, wait a minute, these vows aren't between me and her. They're between me and God and her and God. We're just facilitating these vows with each other to God, saying what we're going to do. Hmm. That's my new thinking on it. You know, you make a commitment in this, that, and else, but you're making it's like when you join the military or you join, you know, something, you're making a pledge, you know, an oath, but you're taking that oath to God. You're just other people around.
Yeah, so, that's, I mean, you're making an important point, Kevin, that marriage is a covenantal relationship, right? I mean, marriage is it's a commitment that a couple makes to one another, but with God, right? And so it becomes a covenant because we say that I will not break my commitment, even if the other person does. And the only way that we can really be empowered to do that is because we have God in our life and in our marriage, right? And I think it's also insightful what you say. I mean, you look on YouTube and you see all these glorified, you know, interesting videos of people getting married with, you know, a lot of glitz and glamour and a lot of beautiful kind of externals. And maybe that's attractive to people and they're looking to do something like that and move on. I don't know, it doesn't provide the foundation in faith and in virtue that maybe they need. So thank you, Kevin. Any other thoughts on your mind?
Well, no, the other thing is, one of the things that, you know, I kept my marriage going is because in the early, after our third child was born, my wife said, you know, you're going to get a vasectomy, you know, and I was like, no, no, no. And she's listening, well, then we're getting divorced and this, that, and else. And then, so I ended up going through with it and then tried to stop in the middle, you know, right before they cut and everything, but that didn't work. And then years later, she says, well, I was listening to my parents. Okay. And now she regrets because she wanted four kids. Okay. I mean, I always said to everybody since I was a kid, I wanted a baker's dozen. So we ended up with three. But with that, you know, I did something to keep my marriage, subtained or together, you know, because now I realized later on it's because God wanted me to. If he wanted me to divorce her, he would suggest divorce her. If he would have wanted me to do anything, he would have intervened. I mean, I prayed for, you know, like 4 years to resolve things, and he didn't answer my prayers to my timeline. I just realized later on it was his. And now we're closer together, you know, with things. We still have issues, and we try to work them out, but, you know, we never went through any classes or anything like that. You know?
I mean, Kevin, I'm very sorry. You know, I'm very sorry that that you got that vasectomy. I'm sorry for you, right? Because sounds like it was under duress. It sounds like it was something you didn't really want to do. You were trying to save the marriage. Certainly, it's a sin, right? I mean, we as Catholics, we know that that it's a sin to have a tubal ligation, to have a vasectomy. Does it mean that you continue living in sin until you die? No, you repent of that sin. You take that to confession. You sometimes in some circumstances, people will attempt to reverse, that sterilization, although that's, not always successful and it's not technically required when it comes to repenting of that sin. But it does create lots of issues later. The sterilization, I mean, people think it's a solution to the stress of the present moment. And hey, I think we're done with kids. Why don't we just call it quits and this will be good. And it's later that this creates issues, not maybe because they want more kids, but oftentimes it's because of exactly what Kevin was describing, where there's pressure and that pressure is indicative of a lack of respect and honor of the other spouse, right? I'm glad that Kevin and his wife were able to look through it, but it's important to talk about these things beforehand and to be on the same page, but also to prioritize our Catholic faith first. I think we have time before the hour, top of the hour, to go to Dave in New Jersey. Hello, Dave. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hi, how you doing? I just want to touch base a little bit on, I do think pre-canon before is important before you get married. I was 21 years old when I got married and right out of the service, and we didn't have any of that pre-canon or anything, and known really the sacraments of God. And so, I mean, I was married for 13 years with three children. And then I wound up working for the state in the prison. And then I wound up after that getting divorced. A lot of things changed in my life. And, I mean, I'm very sorry for all that, that's for sure. I repent a lot. But again, you know, not having that, really knowing what the sacrament was, is a great dissatisfaction. Not having any of that. But I did wind up getting an annulment after that because I want to get more involved in the church, and it took me like 8-9 months to get the annulment. And I get involved more in the church and becoming a Eucharistic minister now, married for 35 years. So,
well, Dave, thanks for your testimony, your witness. I mean, I think your testimony is a good reminder, if it is even a cautionary tale, of the importance of marriage preparation. We heard Dave and a previous caller also refer to pre-Cana. I don't know if all of our listeners are familiar. That's a particular marriage, a reference to marriage preparation that a lot of parishes and some dioceses will use. The idea is it's referring to the wedding at Cana. And we say pre-Cana, meaning before that wedding. And the idea is it's the preparation for the marriage of the couple. That's the idea. But Dave is getting at a point that's very important. You know, if we don't have preparation for these major commitments, then we're putting a lot on the line. I mean, we're putting a lot. Sometimes it works, right? I mean, I shared with you, I think, even on this show, perhaps many months back, I went to bless a house, and really, really nice young couple that I went in. We blessed the house. I had dinner, and I learned after the fact that they had only courted each other for 3 or 4 months before they got married. And I was a little startled, thinking I would never counsel a couple to do that. In their case, their priest knew them both, accompanied them. They were married in Mexico, and they have this incredible, beautiful marriage. I think they've been married for 20-something years now. And it's not necessarily that time, you know, fixes it, but I think that's the exception, right? To get married that quickly is certainly not the rule when it comes to marriage prep. How important it is for us, not only in marriage, but to be prepared for all the commitments we're going to make. This is why baptism takes a long time for adults to prepare for. It's why ordination takes a long time to prepare for. Okay, we're going to shift gears in the coming hour. Going to look at this conversation I had with a young woman about euthanasia. I promised to share this yesterday. We'll get into it today. And your calls, 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show. We'll be back after this.